We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning and happy Friday. Today is Friday, March 7th, and we are still talking about the fallout, I think, from President Trump's triumphant speech Tuesday evening and really what we learned about the Democrats. I think we all knew just instinctively and also by a lot of proof previous to that night that Democrats really aren't interested in protecting and preserving the rights that come from God, our Creator, and, you know, actually doing the business of legitimate governing. They're totally wholly self-interested, and we can see that with all of the insane USAID funding, what Doge has uncovered. But I think even more than that, what was evidenced from the floor that night when the Democrats refused to even stand for a child with brain cancer, when they refused to stand up for basic things like, you know, arresting the person that was responsible for the murder of 13 American soldiers in the botched aftermath of the Afghan withdrawal. I mean, just basic things that we should all come together as a country. I mean, that's not partisan. It's not party specific. When they refuse to just stand for things, even like our flag. I mean, this goes all the way back to the whole, you know, sports taking the knee debacle. I mean, this shows a worldview that is fundamentally opposed to everything that it means and should mean to be an American. So let's welcome in my good friend Todd Starnes, who is the editor-in-chief of ToddStarnes.com and also a Newsmax host and has the Toddcast. I love that title always. I think it's fantastic. Todd, you know, your thoughts, you know, kind of a few days out from this speech.
Well, I think it was so bad that even the mainstream media outlets like CNN and MSNBC were talking about having people fired, whoever was responsible for those little bingo signs that they were holding up during the president's address. The responses they gave to some of these incredible stories that President Trump was sharing. I mean, the fact that you had Democrats who could not even bring it upon themselves to stand up and applaud a little boy with cancer who was named an honorary Secret Service agent. I mean, some of this behavior is just appalling. And it was so appalling, it literally transcended political lines. Even on CNN, where you had focus groups and the overall CNN surveys, an overwhelming number of people thought the Democrats' behavior was just completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And do you think that Democrats at all are self-aware of this? I mean, you know, with Nicole Wallace, Steve Dace was on the program earlier this week and was talking about how, you know, Nicole Wallace, the MSNBC host, actually came on after and was making just these really heinous remarks against this 13-year-old, like, oh, he wants to be in law enforcement. Well, I hope he never has to defend the U.S. Capitol from Trump supporters and isn't one of six that, you know, commit suicide. I mean, just utterly, not even just tone deaf, but genuinely vile rhetoric. It seems like Democrats aren't even aware of how genuinely bad this was.
No, they're not. And I think it goes back to this idea that President Trump broke the Democrat Party. You know, they talked about, you know, the cost, the high cost of things and why prices haven't gone down. And look, realistically, it's going to take time for those prices to come back down. But what we should have been focused on is why they were high in the first place, and that was because of the policies of the Biden administration. And I thought it was interesting that the average Americans that they invited to be on one of the CNN focus groups actually called out the network for that. Look, CBS News Radio released, I think a dozen fact checks during President Trump's address. They failed to release a single one regarding the Democrat Party response, which on its face was actually okay to some extent, but there were so many inaccuracies. They took President Trump out of context. And at the end of the day, it's really not going to matter, because this attempt by that speech last night from the Democrats to bring them to the center, it doesn't work, because the party's not going there. The party's going further to the left.
Yeah. Yeah. And the party absolutely is going further to the left. And I think they don't even want to admit their current mistakes, much less former mistakes. And this gets into a headline, Todd Starnes, that you wrote on ToddStarnes.com. Jake Tapper lied about Biden's health, now writes a book about the cover up. This is just yet another example of hypocrisy. I mean, I think that Tapper should have titled this book, "If I Did It," you know, like O.J. Simpson. I mean, because it's so obvious he was part of this. And now it's like he's trying to be the journalist that goes back and says, "Oh my gosh, you know, look at this cover up. Let me write this expose about it as if I wasn't aware of it and wasn't actually part of this as it was ongoing." I mean, this is yet another tone deaf, lacking self-aware example of Democrats.
Right, exactly, and no one calls them out on it, and they've known this all the time. I think that's going to be the great story coming from the Biden presidency. And when you look at the tone and tenor of the books that are coming out, it is very clear to me that this presidency may be the worst in all of American history, even going past Jimmy Carter's failed presidency. And there was this attempt by the Democrat Party to cover all of this up. There was an attempt by the legacy media to cover it up. And I'm just glad that people are waking up and seeing that, hey, look, you know, they were trying to pull a fast one on all of us. And the American people are smart. You know, and the reason why the American people are smart is because of social media platforms like X and Facebook, where people are able to get the full and complete story. To that end, after President Trump's speech, CBS News released an instant poll. 76% of Americans, 76%, approved of the president's speech. CNN's instant poll, 69% approved of President Trump's speech. So the Democrat Party, the legacy media, they've lost the narrative, they've lost the people.
And that's a very good thing that 69% were willing to say that. I mean, it should have been, you know, in the 99th percentile. But will this ultimately translate into votes, Todd? Because when we see that, you know, America is still divided, and yes, you know, it was a landslide victory for Trump. There was the Republican trifecta. I'm still worried about the midterms, and I've been talking about that throughout this week, that I think that the Trump administration, while having phenomenal wins, really needs to gain momentum heading into the midterms so that we can have a conservative filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and actually codify some of these wins. And so when you're looking at a percentage of people who actually agree with Trump and what he said, will that translate into abandoning the idiots on the left?
Well, I think it should. But a lot of that will depend on the economy. So the American people are a little fickle about that. And so if we're 2 years into the Trump White House and people are having to pay more for goods at the grocery store, that could be problematic for the Democrats. And the reason I say that is that the reason why Trump did so well in the presidential election is because of the cost of everything. That was, you know, those pocketbook politics really take precedent over everything else. So let's see how things go with the tariffs some of the other policies that President Trump is implementing. And look, I think, you know, again, I think if the economy is good, I think it's going to be a good election cycle for the Republicans.
Yeah, I really hope that it is. You know, historically, it's always interesting to see whether the tide shifts a little bit and there's the balance that the American people want to not vest as much power in one party. And so while Trump had the trifecta in his first term for the first 2 years, and obviously there were still issues with Speaker Ryan, and even though he technically had the majority in both chambers, there was still a lot of opposition that I don't think he has, hopefully doesn't have, with Senator Thune, Leader Thune, as well as Speaker Johnson. But what do we as a conservative movement need to do to help advance that priority so that we are looking at genuinely conservative candidates in the primary first, so that we don't just get rhinos in those majorities but still can't pass good legislative wins, but then moving forward into general elections, having these wins across the nation, even on the state level as well?
Well, that is going to be the big fight, I think, on the state level. I know in Tennessee, for example, two major parties, one in Williamson County, the other in Shelby County, which is the Memphis area, Republicans fighting for control of the party in both of those. And by the way, Williamson County was held this week. The conservatives won the fight. I do think, though, that, you know, when you look at policy, there is going to be a fierce battle, and it's already happening within the Republican Party. Is there a place for social issues? Granted, the transgender issue was a major fight for the Republicans, and they were all on the right side of it. But I think when you broaden that out, you're going to find that the Republicans have moderated themselves on a lot of the social agenda issues that drove conservative Christians into the party in the first place. So the question is, okay, will the conservative Christians be able to live with those changes? Will the party leaders now understand how important evangelical Christians are to the party? And, you know, can we all live together in peace and harmony? That will be the big question moving forward, I do believe.
And I think, Todd Starnes, you're absolutely right on that, that as we're building this kind of, you know, big tent coalition, really it's going to come down to maybe some of these internal debates. And so do you see some of these issues that, you know, evangelicals were concerned about, and I think rightly so, in 2024 with some of, like, the Republican Party platform and, you know, some of these things and some of the culture issues, and wondering, you know, is Trump going to stand strongly? We know he'll be strong on the border, the economy, you know, some of those things. But is he going to stand firm on issues like pro-life? And I think that he's proven, at least in the first, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, that he is. Where will the fault lines be in terms of all coalescing together as a movement when there still are really diametrically opposed opinions within the Republican Party? I mean, even on things, you know, like homosexual marriage, for example, and where the so-called gay Republicans, you know, fit into the mix and where these cultural issues go.
Well, I would contend right now that that the evangelicals have really lost their seat of power and influence within the party, aside from maybe the House Speaker. But I think that, you know, they've lost a lot of ground over the years. I mean, you know, and you could actually see that. You know, I used to go to a lot of these Christian conferences and gatherings, and you could see the crowds beginning to shrink. You could see the crowds aging out. And there were not a lot of young people. You know, the young people coming into the Republican Party now, I would say, are much more moderate on many of these culture war issues that we believe are very, very important. Now, the issue of life is interesting because, you know, this was a massive fight within the party. The reality, though, is that this issue is now being waged. This issue is being fought on the state level within the individual state houses. So again, Jenna, it's really hard to say how this is all going to shape out. I'm just sort of letting people know, and really for the past 2 years, I've just been sort of shouting from the mountaintops, you got to pay attention, because the evangelicals have really, they haven't done a very good job, and I am an evangelical, but I would say the evangelicals haven't done a good job of broadening their group and their coalition, and they were a bit insular. And when you become insular, well, you risk becoming irrelevant. And I think that's what's happening right now.
And Todd Stearns, I think you've been very precision on a lot of what you have predicted over the years. And you can follow Todd Stearns on X and also go to toddstearns.com to see all of the great headlines that he posts there. And, and as we're seeing this contrast between the conservative movement as a whole and things that we do agree on, like keeping, you know, men out of women's sports and some of these things, and not like the Wisconsin governor wants to call mothers inseminated persons. I mean, just stuff that it's like, you know, bro, that is so like 2020 of you. And I think we've moved on, hopefully, from some of that nonsense into, as President Trump calls it, common sense. I hope that we can, as a coalition, at least reject some of the ridiculous leftist policies. But isn't this an opportunity for evangelicals to really strengthen our base and to encourage the Trump administration to pay attention to these priorities? But at the same time, we need to give the Trump administration a reason to pay attention to us, that we can deliver on some of these wins. And what's really the best way to do that when, as you've said, I think that largely, not every organization, but largely, you know, evangelicals haven't been as successful as perhaps we should have been?
Well, I think, a big part of that is just we need to be doing our jobs within our church houses, much like we expect Congress to do their job under the Great Dome. We need to be doing our job back homes and in our churches. And if we're able to do that, I think we're going to be just fine. But there is sort of this lust for power that a lot of our evangelical leaders have. And, they're sort of drawn to the lights, the glitz and the glamour of Washington, D.C. and the White House and the Capitol building. But that's really not where we can affect change. We can affect change back home in our local towns and communities. So I really hope that we can focus on, what matters for us. If we don't do that, I don't think that we are going to be that effective. And especially when you look at the winning formula and the winning coalition that President Trump put together, the evangelicals are going to have to learn to work with others. And there is going to have to be some compromise. I know that's a dirty word for a lot of folks, but you are going to have to compromise at some point.
Yeah, and that's politics. And we can make the compromises where we need to so that we have the wins and we can take the stands that we need to as well. So, Todd Stearns, always appreciate your commentary again. Always so precision. Really appreciate you joining this morning. And you can follow Todd Stearns on X and go to toddstearns.com. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we're continuing to talk about the ways that Christians need to engage in culture, and evangelicals specifically need to coalesce around truth, and we need to ensure that our voice is heard, there is a new movie that will encourage you based on the testimony of the individual, Don Wildman, with his story and exactly how he made a difference that is being carried on today through our ministry here at the American Family Association. This movie is titled Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. You can go to culturewarrior.movie and watch this film, and it's totally free. This is something that we really want you to take advantage of, that you can be encouraged by Don Wildman's story, especially for regular listeners of our AFR broadcasts and those of you who donate to this ministry and you've been deeply involved. This is a way to understand, you know, where we've been and where we're going. This was important for me, you know, someone who I'm starting my third years. I was just talking to my producer in the break about that. And I love AFA, and I plan to be here, God willing, for as long as they'll have me. And I love this ministry. And it's always so important to know the history and the founding of a ministry that has spanned almost 50 years. I was talking to Tim Wildman, Don Wildman's son, on the broadcast earlier this week about the history of AFA and the calling that the Lord placed on his father, Don Wildman's life. So be sure to watch the Culture Warrior movie. Definitely better than a lot of the other movies out there that you don't need to see. So you can go to culturewarrior.movie. That's culturewarrior.movie. Well, speaking of the culture wars, we always have to, in addition to News of the Day politics, which we tend to focus on, we also have to talk about culture topics. And this, of course, includes the entertainment industry and, you know, all other types of areas that influence and affect the culture, which includes music and movies and other things. And there's been this kind of viral meme going around social media that my next guest thinks has kind of been debunked, but I think that this raises an interesting question that we should talk about anyway, which is this. The allegation is that Chris Stapleton has filed an official objection to Beyonce's Grammy win. So this is the quotation in this meme that's attributed to Chris Stapleton. No real report on whether this is accurate, but this is at least what is floating around on social media. That Chris Stapleton allegedly said country music has a rich history and a distinct sound that deserves to be recognized and celebrated. We need to ensure that the awards reflect the true essence of the genre and honor those who have dedicated their lives to it. So, of course, Chris Stapleton being a country music star, and Beyonce with this revelation from reports that have suggested that Jay-Z basically just bought her Grammy because, and yeah, well, everybody still calls her Queen Bey and all that. She didn't really earn this outright. It's like somebody just buying enough of their own book to be on the top of the New York Times bestseller list, but it's really not a bestseller if you're the one who's buying it for yourself. But that's kind of in this sort of marketplace and consumer-driven purchase of fame and purchase of these types of awards, everything is really up for sale anymore. So let's welcome in Ryan Helfenbein, who is the Vice President of Communications for Liberty University, the Executive Director of the Standing for Freedom Center, and most importantly, a fellow doodle owner like me with Todd and Copper. So you're talking about that earlier in the break. Ryan, so, you know, I think that this raises the question of, you know, buying your way into these kinds of awards. But even more than that, where we're at with this type of entertainment and sort of a crossover medium. So your thoughts on all this?
Well, first of all, yes, doodle owner extraordinaire. We named our dog Crockett because my wife is from Tennessee and I'm from Texas. And is very patriotic. Remember the Alamo, Davy Crockett. So there's that. I'm wearing my cowboy boots today, so I'm ready for this, Jenna. I just want you to know.
This is why we need TV. Myself,
yeah, that's right. You can see him right now. I got ostrich boots on. But here's the deal with this. I am not. When it comes to country music, an expert, but I am definitely a fan and a fan from afar. I think of old country like Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings. There are many heroes, Johnny Cash, of course, in country music fame. You know, you think about where country music has been. For the longest time, it was gospel music, and then it became country music. In the 1960s and 70s, there was mass commercialization of country music. Nashville was growing by leaps and bounds. This industry is actually huge. It's multi-billions of dollars, and there are many loyal followers all throughout the country.
there was this development in the late 70s called outlaw country, and it was kind of a rebellion against pale pastel of Nashville country, overproduced, more of these symphonic sounds and things like that. The folks like Johnny Cash, like Waylon Jennings, they wanted a more raw and edgy element to country music that was more authentic and real, singing about real things, not the rhinestone cowboys, if you will, like Glen Campbell, but singing about real, authentic stuff. They kind of broke off from that. We're seeing today kind of a crossover again, where you have pop and rap and R&B artists. You think about people like Post Malone, who's crossed over. I think Shaboozey, who's actually on this new album with Beyonce. There's a lot of mixing again. For the purists that are out there, again, this is all entertainment. So you just have to take it for what it is, right? It's entertainment. If it's not your brand of music, great, don't buy it. But if it is, fine, enjoy it. I'm not going to go to war over this, but I will just say, for the purists that are out there, they look at this and say, oh my gosh, this is just another version of commercialism, of sort of the incorporated elements of music, trying to buy their way into market share, trying to grow that by doing these crossover genre kind of things. At the end of the day, I don't know if Stapleton filed this. I believe the second thing for sure, that Jay-Z absolutely bought his way into radio and Billboard charts in terms of playing the song and putting it at the top of the list. A lot of people can do that. So it's one of those things where, when you look at music today, it can be somewhat cynical because how this stuff is hawked at us, whether it be big pharma, like medical advertising, that comes on TV, or if it's like music, where people are just sort of buying their way into an audience, there's a lot of reasons to sort of, I don't buy that, I don't believe that, I'm skeptical that this Grammy is authentically a choice of the people. It seems to be more engineered and orchestrated.
And, Ryan, I think that history is really important. And also, the reason that we're talking about this, of course, is because when you buy your way into the top seller spot, then obviously you get more, replays on various radio networks. I mean, not here at AFR Music. I mean, I don't think we would play Shaboozey, but we'll have to ask JJ in the morning about that one. But, but for all of the ways that the entertainment industry influences culture, it's the same thing as social media influencers. I mean, all of these things, and now it's like my Instagram is just full of reels of people who have, the millions of followers, and all they're doing are these unboxing videos or saying, oh, look at what I found at Target, or look at what I got on Amazon. And it's all of these basically finely packaged ads for things that we need to consume. And so for the Christian, I think this highlights a worldview issue here, that are we just passive consumers of whatever's thrown at us and we kind of go on the bandwagon? I remember as a kid, watching 90s television cartoon. That was peak cartoon, by the way. Like when you had things like, DuckTales, and you had Darkwing Duck, you had Goof Troop. I mean, that was my jam, right? But I remember all of the commercials that were, for Caboodle and for Bedazzled and all these other things that really, as a kid, it's like you want all of that. And you can see the effect of good marketing on your audience. But I think that a lot of people, because of targeted ways that the industry works, even to a much higher level in 2025, we need to be very aware of the worldview mindset behind this.
Yes, absolutely. And so I think this, this is a part of discernment for Christians. When you're watching, for example, the Super Bowl, and you see the halftime come up, and the halftime doesn't look anything like any of the other things of any of the other consumer choices you've made. Thinking about the NFL audience, for example, most people do not care for what's happening with the halftime show. The halftime show is what? It's a way in which the commercial industry is trying to buy market share and add more viewers to that viewing audience of the Super Bowl. So they're trying to pull in and attract more people. We have to be aware and conscientious, I think, when it comes to Christians, what we consume, how messaging is coming at us, and to not get played. I think when you point out on social media, for example, one of the things that I'm very cognizant of is ads that sort of pop up in my feed. And it's really interesting, for example, like on Instagram or Facebook, Meta, they're freakishly on point. And not only like, I'm not talking about, hey, I just went on this website and I was looking at, you know, tents and camping gear, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing this ad, right? I'm talking about they're freakishly on point with a conversation that I might have just had with somebody in the same room. Very bizarre, right, how that's being marketed to us. I'm also encouraged that, you know, how off point X is with its ads, because I'm like, well, it doesn't look like it's spying on me. I can tell you that much. Well, we need not to be oblivious to what mass commercialization is doing at the top level. You know, again, some people, they might love Beyonce's music. Great. Have at it. Go buy that album. I'm one of the more skeptical types. I consider myself more of a purist, not that I don't like rap or R&B or pop or whatever, but I like them separate. And so it's one of those things where if I'm going in and I want to listen to country music, I want to hear it from a true artist and like a Chris Stapleton or a Dolly Parton or a Johnny Cash, or a Reba McEntire. I want to go for those folks because they're stellar at what they do in that genre. Mm-hmm. Consumerism has shaped it. These big corporations, I think music is like $40 billion a year, the music industry. Country music has a very loyal fan base. I think this is exactly why Jay-Z and Beyonce want to break into this market, because they're trying to tap into that loyalty.
Yeah, and nobody is sitting here thinking that Queen Bey is a country artist, which is why it's really funny to me to see that. But, you know, Ryan, I know that there are some listeners out there that are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, Beyonce is basically demonic. And, you know, we've seen people like Dolly Parton and others who have, you know, leftist rhetoric in their in some of their personal takes and stuff. How do you separate saying, you know, they're a really good artist, you know, maybe like even Picasso is in the genre that we can appreciate for what it is, without saying to our kids, but, you know, then go follow the political statements or lifestyle that they affirm? How do you kind of separate those two?
Yeah, I triage something like that and base it off of, is that like, for example, if Dolly Parton is messaging in such a way that she's not really clear, for example, where she stands on the whole, you know, LGBT front, for example, it's not quite clear. You know, I can say, you know, with a clear conscience, that is not her primary message and focus. If, on the other hand, it's somebody like a Taylor Swift, for me, I look at Taylor Swift and her messaging and the things that she puts out there and the way that she enters into sort of these cultural battles. She has become a huge critic of Christianity. She's become a huge critic of the conservative movement, oftentimes interfering with the political process, trying to enter into it in some way, using her platform to influence. For me, that's a no-go. You know, I've, you know, in our household, we don't like Taylor Swift. I mean, that's a choice. But, you know, I triage those things. And so I will say this, a few years ago, in the wake of the Me Too movement, one of the things that I appreciated from Dolly Parton is that she came out there and she made a strong stance for men. She said, I don't hate men. I love men. We need strong men. I mean, she was very encouraging and supportive in that way. So for me, Dolly Parton is a go in our house for a lot of the good reasons. But yeah, people have to make those determinations and those decisions on their own. I am by no means one of these, you know, Bill Gothard type advocates where you have to cancel all kinds of secular music because all of it is demonic. I don't believe that. I believe there are redemptive qualities when it comes to secular music, but we absolutely need to be clear on the messaging. What is being messaged? What is the main thing that these artists are showing when they go out there and rep their brand? What are they about? That's how I make that determination.
I think that's really wise. And, you know, growing up, that was the same for me and my family. We didn't just say, oh, you can only listen to overtly Christian content. It was more about analyzing, okay, what's the message of this movie or this book or this music and how to critically analyze that, because we need to be in the world, not of it, and make those good decisions. So Ryan Helfenbein, we're going to have you stick through to the next segment, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If we have learned anything from the 2024 election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. So would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or you can visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and I'm still here with my guest, Ryan Helfenbein, who is the Vice President of Communications for Liberty University and the Executive Director at the Standing for Freedom Center, also at Liberty U. You can follow Ryan on X at R. Helfenbein, if you can spell that last name. It's H-E-L-F-E-N-B-E-I-N. Thank you. Didn't even need to use that in a sentence. So, you know, I passed the round for spelling on that one. But Ryan, you know, we're talking about the culture and the effect of, you know, the music industry, the entertainment industry. And I think we also need to talk about what has happened recently with the movie industry. And we've seen for a long time that Hollywood and Hollyweird has been very anti-family, anti-traditional values, anti-Trump, anti, you know, anything that is good and morally upright. And shockingly, at the Oscars last Sunday, there were a couple of moments that actually made me feel like, wow, are we kind of returning to a sense of decency, perhaps? I mean, a lot of the actresses who were there actually wore, you know, sort of these, you know, 1950s style ball gowns that were actually lovely, that, you know, weren't these just wild, really, frankly, evil looking monstrosities. So that was a plus. But then also Kieran Culkin, who, yes, apparently is the brother of Macaulay Culkin, went on stage and accepted an Oscar. And in the midst of his speech, he had this to say to his wife.
I love you, Jazz. This is, I have to thank my wife, Jazz, for absolutely everything, for giving me my favorite people in the world. This is, please don't play the music, because I want to tell a really quick story about Jazz. About a year ago, I was on a stage like this, and I very stupidly, publicly said that I want a third kid from her, because she said if I won the award, she would give me the kid. It turns out she said that because she didn't think I was going to win. But after, and people came up to her and were like, you know, really annoying her. I think it got to her. But anyway, After the show, we're walking through a parking lot. She's holding the Emmy. We're trying to find our car. Emily, you were there, so you're a witness. And she goes, oh, God, I did say that. I guess I owe you a third kid. And I turned to her and I said, really, I want four. And she turned to me. I swear to God this happened. It was just over a year ago. She said, I will give you four when you win an Oscar. I held my hand out. She shook it. And I have not brought it up once until just now. You remember that, honey? You do? Okay.
This is just great, Ryan. And I think a really wholesome moment.
Yes, I totally agree. By the way, I don't have an Oscar, but I do have four kids. So there's a lot of joy in our house, but not a lot of sleep. But I'll say, look, you know, with all the negativity that you often see out of Hollywood, and you hit the nail on the head, like through the years, we have seen this precipitous decline. A lot of times these Oscars go towards movies that people don't watch. The mainstream, when you think about it, the American family, the kind of content that they want to consume, a lot of times it's even outside of Hollywood, you know, producing, you know, $100 million flicks that just bomb in the box office. I cannot speak to the movie that he won for. I don't even know what it is, but I love this speech. And I will say that just a few years ago, people might remember or recall Michelle Williams, you know, Dawson's Creek, The Greatest Showman. She was the kind of the co-star there with Hugh Jackman, played his spouse in that movie. You know, she gets up on the stage at the Golden Globes, not the Oscars, but she basically credits abortion, a woman's right to choose, for her being able to be an actress. And it was disgusting. And I remember a lot of people having a lot of criticism for that. This was heartwarming. I really like this. I don't know if in real life Kieran Culkin is a soy boy, but he's a hero for saying what he just said right there. And by the way, if you're a fan of Home Alone, Home Alone 1, Home Alone 2, this is Fuller. Fuller used to wet the bed in those movies, but he didn't on Oscars night. I am so grateful for that, and we need more of that kind of energy today when you think about all of the worst examples of masculinity, all the worst examples of femininity in our culture. We need to be pro-marriage, and we need to be pro-family, which means pro-child.
Absolutely. And you know, as President Trump said, we want more babies, and that obviously needs the context of the family. And it was great that, you know, he's talking to his wife and saying, I want more kids. And you can see that you can, yes, still be successful while having a family. But it takes, I think, prioritizing family first. And Ryan, you know, so was this just kind of a one-off? And I mean, I loved that everybody was applauding and, you know, was laughing. This wasn't like it fell flat in a room full of, you know, liberal leftists. That was encouraging. But was this kind of a one-off, kind of like, you know, Harrison Butker that, you know, stood up actually for the family and then got lambasted for it and was kind of a one-off maybe in the NFL? Or are we maybe seeing a return to decency?
I think we're seeing a return to decency. I think that people have had enough of the cloud and the darkness of this woke movement. You know, it's not panning out. By the way, it leads not only to a spiritual, moral decline, it leads to population decline. You know, it leads to the suicide of any nation, any culture, you name it. You know, the pro-life movement is not just a Christian movement. The pro-life, pro-family, pro-marriage. Jesus said this in the Gospels. You know, even the wicked know how to give good things to their children. How much more does your Heavenly Father care for you? And I think the principle to be drawn from that is, look, throughout all of human history, every great society, not everyone is saved, not everyone is Christian. In fact, Christians are in the minority of history, obviously. Narrow is the path that leads to life. Narrow is the gate. We have to remember that, but what we also recognize is there's a common grace when it comes to marriage. There's a common grace when it comes to family and children. It's a blessing to everyone. And so This is a gift of God. And I don't think, I think a lot of people are recognizing right now what a beauty life is, how gloomy it has been under wokeness, and how lonely and depressing it is as well. So I'm hoping that America, at least American culture, is undergoing, you know, a renewal. I hope that we see a spiritual awakening. The Great Awakening is over. I think that while we'll see lingering effects of wokeness, and there will be people that are going to be digging in and they're going to be trying to concentrate hard on it, I think the majority of people are saying, this is gross, it's repulsive, we reject it wholeheartedly. I would love to see something happen in Hollywood where people finally, where the industry gets together and says, you know what, we'd like to make money again. Like, actually, don't make films that bust, but are actually pro-family and pro-marriage. And I think they would see a renaissance and a renewal. People would probably go and pay money to go see those movies. We've seen evidence of that with faith-based films. And a lot of those are going gangbusters in the box office because Christians and non-Christians alike share an affinity for things that are wholesome.
Yeah, and we've seen that even with the Disney company kind of righting their ship a little bit and saying, you know, that they're going to move away from all of this, you know, DEI and those types of things, and actually focus on more family-friendly films because, you know, like it or not, families and Christian families also go to the movies and watch movies and have streaming services and, you know, are a big demographic that if these corporations really are concerned about their bottom line as, you know, as capitalist industries and you know, private companies, then rather than, you know, the human rights campaign designation or some other special interest, then they need to actually give the people what they want, and they need to market to their demographics. And I think that is genuinely encouraging to see that some of these companies, whether it's long term or not, or whether there's, you know, there are other reasons besides recognizing, oh, we were morally wrong, we can at least encourage those moves, because I've always said, Ryan, that while, you know, boycotts, I've come around a little bit to say that, you know, boycotts work in some instances, not all, but more than just boycotts, which is kind of a negative punishment to companies by removing your dollars, I've also always said I'm a fan of positive boycotts, that I want to fund things that are good, that if something like the Disney company sees sales of, you know, pro-America merch and family-friendly films, then they're going to see, oh, that's the content and the product that actually sells. Because if we just then, you know, remove ourselves completely from the industry and say, well, we're just going to take our money and stay home and we don't go see any movies, then they're going to say, oh, well, look, the top grossing films are the ones that cater to the leftists. So I think that there is some strategy here in rewarding these companies for at least, even if it's not entirely the right motivation, that they're actually doing the right thing.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that approach. Boycotts, by the way, that are temporary, those don't work. Boycotts that are sustained, they can, because they put pressure on it. You think about what happened with Target, you know, just a couple of years ago, with some of these more satanic themed merchandise that they were putting on the shelves. There was a sustained period of time where the boycott actually put a dent in not only profits, but also in stock price. It put a significant dent, and they were paying attention. These corporate executives, a lot of them can be spineless, they can be feckless, they're cowards, but guess what? If you put a system of punishments and rewards in place, punish people that do bad, reward people that do good, you reinforce the negative, but also the positive, and I think that's important. So if you are... I would encourage Christians, don't be Amish. No offense to the Amish, but don't remove yourself completely from society. That's ridiculous. We need to enter into the marketplace. We're called to do so, to be missionaries, to be salt and light. But when we do, let's put our dollars behind things that are meaningful and that matter, and let's reward people that are doing good work and putting good products out there.
Amen to that. What a great note to conclude this podcast. Friday episode on, Ryan, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's the way that my parents operated growing up. That's the way that, you know, I make my decisions as well. Be in the world, not of it. You know, reinforce the good and always champion the good in society. So Ryan Helfenbein, always really appreciate it. Again, you can follow him at rhelfenbein on X. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. Don't miss the latest episode of On Demand, our AFR exclusive podcast, doing a deep dive into the issues you care about. The new episode is released today, AFR.net. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.